Root beer is not gross.
Root beer is gross.
It is not gross.
It is gross.
It is awesome.
No.
I got me some Faygo root beer right here.
You're a Faygo.
Right now.
You're a Faygo.
Thanks, Aaron, for bringing the Faygo root beer over.
Enjoy following the Insane Clown Posse around all summer.
He didn't bring red.
Oh, Faygo. Oh, that specific?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. No. Okay.
But he brought Grape Crush.
Yeah, which you sucked down in 2 seconds.
That was mine. That had my name on it.
Uh-huh.
Grape's the best soda ever.
I wouldn't know. I never get any.
You don't
want
a grape soda.
I like a grape soda, but you pig up.
When did you ever like grape soda?
I've always liked
grape soda. I've known you 15 years. We've never had this discussion.
Yeah, when we've gone to Pink's, what do I always get?
I'm not paying attention to what you're eating at Pink's.
Grape soda is what I'm saying.
Mm.
Anyway.
Linoleum Knife is what you're listening to.
Yes, and the hick over there drinking the Faygo root beer is Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
That's right. Alonzo Duralde, what are you film critic for anymore?
Well, you know.
F all is what you're film
much,
critic for.
Pretty much, yeah. I get laid off a lot. That's the new web paradigm. I am,
that's
however.
It's because you're.
It's all my fault.
Tell everybody the reason. Tell everyone the ethical violations you've committed.
What?
You know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea.
You know why. Ethics violations.
You are lying.
And that is why he is no longer the DVD editor of MovieLine.com.
No, this is how rumors get started. Not true. You are lying.
No.
The folks at MovieLine are lovely.
The internet sucks,
unfortunately,
basically.
Like AOL, they
the people at MovieLine are quite nice.
Yes, but they've
we love Jen Yamato, and actually, I don't know anyone else at MovieLine.
Stu Van Arsdale, they're great folks.
Lewis, I know him, but is Lewis a boss, or is he just a writer?
No, he's a writer, but he's a staff writer.
They're great.
So the staff writers are now basically going to be doing all the content for the site, because they have said farewell to their freelancers, one of which was me.
Yep.
So this month, however, I am filling in for Miss Gray Drake at movies.com.
In the paradigm of movies.com, there is a he said, she said element that goes on all the time between me and Gray. I'm the he said. Gray is the she said. But Gray is traipsing around India on an eat, pray, love kind of trip. So Alonzo's
stuck with the worst part of the movie.
I know. The part where you have to go hang out with Richard Jenkins all day, and he calls you breakfast or groceries.
Groceries.
He calls her groceries and tells her
there's flies everywhere.
Tells her to like get in touch with herself and pet an elephant.
Yeah,
that part of the movie sucks. Yeah, it's better when she's in Italy.
Eat or love, but pray leave me out.
Like anyway. I can see the part. I can see the appeal of hanging around with Javier Bardem and whatever
Bali.
It was. Bali. That would not be bad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's all like, let us dance, you know, like, and stuff like that. And then, of course, Italy, where all they're doing is eating all the time, which is perfect. And then,
I'm in for that.
But the India part just looked.
Yeah. No thanks.
Oh, I have to go here and sweat my ass off and eat food that's going to give me diarrhea.
For spiritual
and meditate
growth.
All day long.
No thanks.
Anyway, Gray's in India.
Yes.
Apparently having a better time than the one that I have just described for you.
I'm sure.
But that makes Alonzo her temp. Her sub.
Basically.
The she said.
I'm the substitute.
Of the month.
I'm the substitute teacher this month.
I like to call you the she said.
I know you do. And enjoy it while it lasts, because every other time in our life, you're the wife. Anyway, so yeah, if you look under Gray's name on movies.com at the reviews.
You're going to see Gray's face.
Yes, but you will read my reviews.
Imagine her with the glasses and a beard.
Yeah, yikes. She's already got the glasses of her own.
That's true, she does have glasses.
Anyway, so I'm reviewing for a good chunk of this month in the first part of May, so you can see my reviews there. And after that, who the heck knows? But, you know, things happen.
Not collecting unemployment, because freelancers can't do that.
Nope. But, you know.
So,
our PayPal name. I will survive. Stop.
Our corporation name is 000, which turned out to be prophetic, because that's about how much money we're about to start making.
But, you know, maybe we should set up one of those Amazon tip jars or something once we get our website up and running, but that's another story.
We're open to dinner invitations.
Totally, yeah. Scraps from your table. But busy week this week. There were, what, five?
Four.
Five.
Four movies.
Five.
What? Name them.
Scream 4.
That's number one.
Rio.
That's number two.
The Conspirator.
That's number three.
Oh, you're right. Four. Okay.
Yeah.
For once, you were right. Enjoy it. Bronze this moment. Mm. Four movies this week.
I'm not bronzing anything. I got a Faygo root beer.
Enjoy that. So let's start with Scream 4, which is actually the one movie I really liked this weekend, even though apparently it's not doing the numbers that the Weinstein Company
cares
was
about
hoping.
The numbers. I don't care about the numbers.
Actually, I don't even know why I read that stuff.
You do. Every Sunday. It's just the stupidest thing. I'm not saying you're stupid.
Oh, no. No.
But every Sunday morning, Monday morning, this is what I get from across the apartment. I'll be doing something very happily, looking at a cookbook, having some tea, enjoying internet websites such as Apartment Therapy, where I can look at other people's better couches than the ones we have.
Watching Rebecca Black again.
And here's what I hear across the apartment. Soul Surfer only fell 39% this week. Like, what the F do I care about Soul Surfer's box office? The answer? No.
All right.
No F's do I care.
I will not.
About Soul Surfer's box office.
I will no longer share such information.
No, you keep going ahead and sharing them. It's part of your charm, your nerdy
shut up.
Numbers quoting
now
abilities.
Now you're just patronizing me.
Yeah? So what?
So cram it with walnuts. Mm-hmm. So Scream 4.
It's real good. I'm not going to tell you a thing about it.
Well, yeah. No, we're not going to give away.
It is getting mixed reviews.
It is. But, you know, I had fun.
Had a good time at all the Scream movies.
Me too.
Even 3.
Yes. I totally defend 3.
3 descends into silliness.
Yeah.
But I like silliness. And Scream 4, I will say this about it. It's funnier than it is scary. It's more funny than scary.
But I'm
in fact, it's not scary at all. But it's fun to watch because they love horror movies. And they love playing with that idea. They love, like, holding the mirror up to the mirror up to the mirror, which is just a fun, you know, goofy thing to do. Oh, God, this Fago Rupert is going to make me burp.
Oh,
talk.
Charming.
I'll hold my mouth. I'm not going to be Howard Stern about it.
Thank you. Okay. The other, and also what's kind of cool about that is the notion that they've updated the story in an interesting way. Like, they acknowledge that since the first movie came out in 1996, there is the internet, like, more than there was then. There is, you know, texting and tweeting and and vlogging and all that stuff.
And
sort of the nature of what passes for fame these days.
And what passes for horror movies these days,
exactly,
too.
Yeah, because it's kind of Scream's fault in a lot of ways. because the slasher movie genre was dead and buried, as they say. And because Scream did so well, that I think is what opened the door to all those crappy remakes of like great 70s horror movies.
Yeah,
And so they kind of acknowledge that. Like they talk about remakes
don't give away that funny part. Okay.
No.
Don't give away any of the parts.
I'm not.
Here's what's weird. I've had no fewer than 4 people privately ask me, does Sydney die in this movie? I'm like, why are you asking me that?
I know.
What, do you not want to go see it? And they're like, no, I want to go see it. I just want to know if she dies. And I'm like, why? And one of them actually said this. One of them had a good reason. One person had a good reason. One person had a good reason because he was accompanying a friend who loves Sydney so much
that she's such a deep character.
That he doesn't want to see her die. And so,
God.
And so I told him what happens.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, okay, thanks. Now I'll go tell my friend, and then we can make a decision about what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then another person said that they just don't like to feel that tension. They want to go, but they don't want to have any tension about knowing if the main character dies or not.
I don't get the culture of spoilers.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't understand it. Like,
I mean, I'll give them away if the movie is poo.
Yeah, but I mean, but
I'll just be like, okay, I'm going to spoil this whole movie because it's such crap.
I don't get what the people who go out of their way to find out this stuff in advance.
Tom Ford does.
Tom Ford, I know.
Not the fashion designer, Tom Ford.
Our Tom Ford.
We have a Tom Ford in our life whose name is Tom Ford.
Yeah, no. He like totally already knew who, you know, how things came out in Scream 4. And it was like, well, why did you want to? Like, here's the thing. One time ever in my life.
You think I'm a control freak?
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he listens too. So.
I know. Yeah, Tom Ford. That's what you are. So there.
Anyway.
He's listening.
I was going to say, one time, I think I read a script online, you know, back in when I was for my early days on the internet in the late 90s. It was like, oh, wow, cool. I can read this screenplay. And then a year or two later, when I finally saw the movie, I was like, wow, this isn't really all that fun because I know all the things that are going to happen. And so then since then, I'm like, well, screw it. I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
I don't watch trailers.
Yeah, I just assume never watch trailers again if I didn't have to. But it's like, I don't get the people who like comb the internet to find out surprises. What fun is that?
With one of those little red combs.
Ew. Looking for nits. Not that we would know anything about that. Yeah, so I don't understand the concept.
I've heard.
It's been told. But in any event, Scream 4, Hoot, I had a good time.
Yeah, I had a really good time. You know who I really liked in it? I really liked Hayden Panettiere.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It may just be residual goodwill from watching her try to save dolphins
in the cove. I remember that.
She risked her life in that movie.
Yes.
Literally, Japanese fishermen in real life, Hayden Panettiere actually risked her own life to save dolphins in Japan. I watched it happen in that documentary, The Cove, which some people like and some people don't, but it was shocking to watch her like be a part of this crew of people who were in danger of being shot to death.
Yeah.
For trying to save these dolphins.
That was not just showing up.
And when she did that, I was like, "You're not bad. You're not bad. I mean, you might be hell on wheels on a set for all I know, but I mean, like, in real life, you're not bad.
Yeah. You know. Points for that. I thought it was a fun cast. I liked the youngsters. I thought the Scream vets were all fun, and thank goodness Courtney Cox fired whoever made her hair for Scream 3, because
I don't remember her hair in Scream 3.
I just watched it again. It was so unflattering.
What was it?
It was like these bangs, and it sort of like was kind of off the sides of her head, and it made her skull look weird. It was...
Well, she's got a long face.
Yeah, but it was whoever, I don't know if she's
a thin lady.
If she ticked off like hair, makeup, and the cameraman on day one and maybe they just went after her the whole time.
You don't mess, do not.
Yeah.
Anybody who's an actor out there who's famous, if you're any famous people listening, you're on a set, you be nice to the hair and makeup people or they will F
crucify
you.
Yeah.
And you won't even know.
Yeah. It'll be months later, and then you'll see the playback.
What was the story we heard once, and I don't want to name names.
No.
Didn't we hear a story once from someone who worked on a set where the costume people hated the actress.
Oh, yeah.
So much.
They took in her dress like an eighth of an inch
every day just to screw with her mind and make her think that she was getting fat.
Yes. You really got to admire that level of dedication.
You be nice to that crew, or they will get back at you somehow.
There's also the story about the Teamsters that peed in the water supply of somebody's
for that
trailer.
One actress.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
It's always an actress. Why is it always an actress?
Do we
think it's because they're so beleaguered anyway that they take it out on the crew?
Well, yeah,
because
they're all hungry, so they're angry. And it also, I'm sure, like a lot of actors who are jerks probably manage to ingratiate themselves with the Teamster guys and that dude sort of way.
Just a hunch. Including that one that told our friend never to look at him again.
Yes, like him, for instance. Yeah. Yes, that star of stage and screen.
friend who worked on a movie, a recently released movie, by the way.
Yes.
On the set, he was told by the lead actor, who was the meanest man on earth, never look at me again.
And he wasn't even told by him directly.
No, he had to send a message.
By intermediary, he was told, never look at the star again. So, yeah. Anyway, moving on. Rio.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's...
It's getting really good reviews.
God.
Other people except us were enchanted by it.
Yes. I mean, it looks
nice.
It looks great. It looks pretty.
It looks great. It's real pretty. It's like a bowl of Fruit Loops.
Yeah.
A bowl of digital Fruit Loops exploded in your face.
The colors are very vibrant, you know. But, oh, God, I hate those Ice Age movies, which are hugely successful.
They're tedious.
And this is that same kind of, like, you know, archetype characters and plot, and then resolve, and it's right. I get so bored. I mean, like, I can see where kids would be totally swept up in this stuff, and fine, let them, but I feel for the parents out there how do they stay awake through this stuff?
They don't. They get the oldest kid in the bunch.
Right.
And they say, look, if you see me dozing off, make sure the little ones don't go running around and get like abducted or whatever. But I might end up taking a nap.
Yeah.
And then the 14-year-old's like, what's in it for me? And then you say to the 14-year-old, here's 10 extra bucks.
Right.
Or you can stay out till midnight or whatever. And then that 14-year-old is like cracking the whip on the 5-year-old. Yeah.
I'm going to put
that's
my,
how it works.
I'm going to put my earbuds in and listen to this Jodi Picoult audiobook or whatever.
Who? The what?
Some author that is like super popular that I have no idea who she
Okay. She wrote, what's that one with Cameron Diaz? She wrote the book that was...
Oh, My Sister's Keeper?
I think she wrote that.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah.
She's one of those Oprah kind of authors.
Right,
you know?
Right. Jodi Picoult.
I'm saying the hip and current with the kids, you know. Yeah.
you watch the movie, I'll be listening to my audiobook of The Killer Inside Me. Yeah. What was that beep?
I have no idea.
Something just beeped.
From outside, maybe.
Maybe.
It was a hootenanny in the streets last night, by the way. Did you sleep through all that?
Where?
Just yelling drunk people.
Dude, I was making out with Xanax. Oh, okay. Something's beeping.
What is that?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Anyway, so Rio, meh, whatever. It does have some nice samba music, which I always enjoy.
You do enjoy samba.
I do enjoy samba.
Yeah.
I love... What is that?
You keep talking, I'll go investigate the noise.
I like me some Jobim and some Astrid Gilberto.
Talk about that sucky Will I Am.
But yes, unfortunately, the hit single from Rio is this terrible Will I Am song called Hot Wings, which basically boils down to the hook of party, party, party. Like all Black Eyed Peas songs boil down to one stupid hook. So there was that. And your usual sort of all-star cast of voices, you know. Anne Hathaway was fine. I didn't really recognize that it was her. Leslie Mann was okay. And Rodrigo Santoro. Dave White, however, never wants to hear Jesse Eisenberg cartoon voice again.
Yeah, his voice is too distinctive. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking he was going to, say Social Network insults at me. Like, you have my attention. You have the minimum amount of my attention. Like, I don't want a parrot talking to me like that. Oh, and by the way, the thing that's beeping.
Smoke detector?
Is our alarm.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. Suddenly it just started beeping.
Is it low battery or something?
Well, if it has to have a low battery, there's no way to get into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to have to call...
Yes,
the company.
We'll figure that out.
When we're done with this.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the door is closed. So occasionally you're going to hear, perhaps, faintly in the distance, a beep. Yeah.
But whatever. Okay, and now the other two movies this week, I kind of almost want to lump them together because they're both, like, one's a left-wing movie and one's a right-wing movie.
That's true.
But they are both, like...
Real boring.
Yes. They're, like, super speechifying, you know, lecture time.
Oh, movies. God, yeah.
So, you know...
Except one's got a budget and actors and whose names you know.
Right.
And one doesn't.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's funny. So it's like, really, it's not about where you are on the political spectrum, because I agree with one movie and don't with the other, but I was bored snotless at both of them.
Yes. Whatever your politics are, everything sucks.
Yes. The movies we're talking about are Robert Redford's The Conspirator.
And here comes a helicopter. There's a conspiracy of noises.
Indeed.
Actually, trying to destroy this podcast.
That's
today.
Who the conspirators are. Which is about the trial of the conspirators and behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and the attempted assassinations of the Vice President Andrew Johnson and Secretary of State William Seward, right? Is that right?
Sure.
Something Seward. Because I remember Seward's Folly. That's the one thing I remember reading.
Because he bought
Alaska.
Right.
Anyway, but it's really about Guantanamo Bay. It's really about, you know...
It's a 9/11 movie.
It's a 9/11 movie. It's about people not getting their constitutionally guaranteed right to trial. It's about habeas corpus being suspended. It's about the Bill of Rights. It's about quelling a national panic after a horrifying event by...
Finding a boogeyman and crucifying the boogeyman.
Exactly. Yeah. By subverting, you know, the boogeyman's rights. And so, on all that level, you know, yes, I agree, Robert Redford. That's a bad thing.
We are good. We're good liberals here.
Yes.
And in fact, a liberal's not even a strong enough word for what I am.
We're socialists.
I'm a total socialist, I think. I really believe I am sometimes. Like I see what happens in the Western, in the European countries where they have like socialism, democratic socialism, and I think those countries look like a great place to live.
Yes.
Like I see Denmark and I think that looks nice.
Yeah.
It looks like a nice place to go.
Hello, European Union.
Look how nice they all look how happy most of them look. You know. And yeah, so I mean, I really sometimes think, okay, sure, call me a socialist. I think I might be one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to steal your profits. You know, John Galt, I don't want to take anything away from you. You know, I just want you to not have your business located in the Cayman Islands and employing 9-year-old Malaysian child slaves to make your sneakers. And I want you to pay some effing tax.
Exactly.
On what you do, on the, all the bajillions of profits that you earn. You know, pay your tax.
You radical.
I got to pay mine.
How dare you?
I got to pay mine. You got to pay yours.
So, yeah. So, anyway. So the conspirator, whether or not you agree with it, it's just kind of a snooze. It's you know.
I know. I'm sorry. I was getting ahead of myself. I was beginning to talk about Atlas Shrugged.
But here's the thing. Both movies, the characters.
They're not characters.
They're straw men.
They
come in. They are mouthpieces for thing. You know, viewpoints the filmmakers agree with, and viewpoints the filmmakers don't agree with, and nobody really ever changes. I mean, maybe the James McAvoy character in The Conspirator has.
I will say that James McAvoy brings an energy to his performance,
and his character actually changes over the course of the film, which nobody in Atlas Shrugged does, and almost nobody in The Conspirator does. It's like they come in idealistic or wronged or devious or whatever, and then that's how they come out at the other end.
If you are a big fan of James McAvoy, you might want to see this.
Yeah.
If you're a big
Robin Wright
completist
fan.
About history, you might want to see this.
Yeah, I can. And
if
I'm
you
sure...
have a fetish for beards, you really will want to see this.
High schoolers, I think, will be watching this in civics class for years
and,
ago.
And they will be bored by it.
Yes.
Because it feels like homework.
Yes.
The trend of men having beards and facial hair must have made it very easy for them to cast all their background. Because there are some guys in this movie whose job it is to just sit at a table in a courtroom and go,
with a beard that goes to
like
belly button.
A beard that goes down to like their yeah.
ZZ Top beards.
Their ribs, you know.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure they just put the word out among the Civil War reenactor crowd
and
they were good to go.
And you know? All the guys in like Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can I just say, I am bored with movies where Danny Houston plays the devious bad guy. Because,
all he has to do is walk on camera, and you're like, well, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like what's...
Like, the one thing, like, when he was in Children of Men, and he wound up not being the bad guy, that was a twist, almost. Because, like, he always plays the corrupt bad guy, and it's just like...
Or just a heartless... Creep.
Yeah, or just a bastard, you know. So it's just seen it, done it, whatever. And then Atlas Shrugged, oy,
which is hilarious.
And it's not the colossal disaster that you might think it's going to be because it was sort of rushed into production with a low budget.
I did want it to be a lot more funny bad than
yeah,
it was.
I was hoping for some like the political Birdemic or something, but it's just. It just feels like
it's just boring. It's just people sitting around
talking
at tables,
and talking.
Well, and it's about what they're talking about too. It's like they're talking about, you know,
industry
and rail transportation and
government conspiracies,
the efficacy of one type of engine over another,
to take down tycoons. You know, and I mean, really, like every scene is set in like a restaurant or an office or a limousine,
right.
And it's just like. Talking heads,
talk.
You know, and the thing is, there are filmmakers that have made the world of business and industry and you know, transportation sexy and interesting and whatever. And for all of
the makers of 9 to 5,
for instance, yes. Yeah. And for all of its faults, Atlas Shrugged the book is kind of a page turner. I mean, it's
Working Girl, also great.
There you go.
Michael J. Fox in The Secret of My Success. A movie about business.
How to succeed in business without really trying. Yeah. Yes, totally. But Atlas Shrugged, it's just boring. And the cast is mostly in over their heads, or at least they can't inject the much needed life into the just stilted dialogue. Everybody, there's a lot of declaiming in this movie where people just sort of tell you their entire philosophy about what a man creates and how he should be able to entitle to his earnings and that no one can take that from him and blah, blah, blah.
What I love the most, well, first of all, I like the part where the woman playing
Dagny Taggart.
Dagny
talks about stupid altruism.
Talks about stupid altruism.
That's an Ayn Rand moment.
We promised ourselves, each other, that we weren't going to cackle out loud.
Because we were in a theater of true believers.
Oh, yeah.
It was showing in one theater in Los Angeles. We went to the Saturday night show. It was packed.
Packed, yeah.
And
with folks that were cheering and applauding and whooping it up.
Yeah.
It's like a Tyler Perry movie for rich white jerks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like a Tyler Perry movie or like Left Behind or, you know, Soul Surfer or whatever, these are movies that are designed for the people who want to see them and to hear the things that that movie has to say, which is fine. I get that. I mean, I remember in the early 90s when the new queer cinema happened, it was like, wow, you know, we're not invisible on screen anymore. Someone's actually making movies about our hopes and our fears and our fantasies or whatever, you know. So I get that starvation for representation. But
you were a big giant and you wanted a big cereal.
Thank you.
And you got one.
But you have to remember that the people who aren't there, who aren't in your boat, aren't...
people who were not new queers in 1991.
Are going to look at those movies with a different...
Did not care about the new queer cinema.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and so, like, there were critics who for years hated Greg Araki's movies, for example, you know, because they thought they were talky or pretentious or, you know, badly acted or whatever. But, you know, eventually he gave us Mysterious Skin, which is, you know, no matter how you approach it, a really terrific movie. So who knows? Maybe one of these like hacks that makes, you know, the Omega Code or whatever will eventually, like, you know, be the 100th monkey at the 100th typewriter and give us a movie that has some crossover appeal. Maybe even Tyler Perry one of these days will actually get his game together and make something that's not ridiculous. But you know, I get the hunger for those kind of movies, but that doesn't make them good. It just makes them satisfying to people who walk into the theater agreeing with what the movie has to say anyway. I can't see anybody being won over by Atlas Shrugged to these ideas.
Wow, that was so good. They're right.
This changes everything.
This changes everything. Anyone who ever asks me for any kind of help is a leech and a parasite.
That's right.
Here's what I liked about last night's experience.
Yes.
I liked at the very beginning that the manager of the theater came down to the front at the beginning and he said, "Welcome to tonight's screening of Atlas Shrugged." And people were all like, "Woo!" clapping and everything. And then he goes, "I would really like it if everyone would turn off your cell phones because it's inconsiderate to have those cell phones on." And people were going, "Yay!" And I was thinking, what if it makes me happy to have my cell phone on? Who are you to interrupt?
Who are you to legislate and regulate my use?
My happiness depends on my ability to text during the movie and to have a loud phone conversation right in the middle of the film. If you don't like it, go buy yourself a private theater and have your own screening, John Galt. Go do it. Like you're don't get in my way.
That's right.
This is me in my way. It's going to happen.
You're inhibiting my commerce.
Right now. Yeah, you're inhibiting my happiness. So back off. And then I also like the part in the movie where the oil tycoon's house burned down, and then we had to call in fire trucks from other counties. And I was like, well, why should the fire trucks from another county come to put out your fire?
Yeah,
screw
take
you and your fire.
For
yeah,
your
put
own
out your own damn fire. You got a problem?
What I like is when Dagny goes.
I set fire to your house. You know why? Because I felt like it. You know why? Because that made me happy. Because
I'm going to make money off.
I'm going to make money off of your insurance or whatever.
Because I love when Dagny goes running into the house, calling the guy's name, like. Wait, there's 8 fire trucks outside. Nobody went into the house to see if he might be in there. The civilian has to come running up to do that.
I just like all the things in this movie that like are paid for by the public, you know, fund. You know, the firemen and the streetlights and the things that, you know, everyone's just, they're just, you know, they should be able to, they should have those things, right? No. Take it all the way. If you're gonna be this dude,
yeah,
if you're
feudalism.
If you're gonna be the guy who wants, you know, no government and no anything, then take it all the way. Buy your own theater to watch the movie so you don't have to listen to me text.
And build a wall around it.
Build your own moat so that the fire can't touch your house, you know, just stops at your water moat. You know, do all the things that you need. Buy your own electric generator and create your own electricity. Just do it all. Do it. And then we'll all be rid of you. That'll be great.
My other favorite.
It's a bad movie, and its politics are for idiots.
My other favorite part was where Hank Reardon, the government forces him that he can only own one company, so he has to sign away.
The part they take.
Wait. He has to sign away, you know, his foundry and his mines and his this and his that, like 6 or 7 different companies.
Right.
And every person that he signs them away to, it's like they called central casting and says, Can we have the shifty no goodnik department, please? Because like they all just look like they're like extras from The Sopranos or something. Just like these,
but they're in suits and they look like mean bureaucrats.
Yeah, they totally look like.
What's
like,
great is
like
that
they can't wait to stab him in the back, and it's just so obvious. Like they just cast all these people with these significant leers.
But it's a series of shots. This is what makes it great. There's a series of shots of him having to sign away each corporation, like the government has come and taken his businesses away
that he created.
And he sits there at his desk and he signs the paper and hands the blue folder to guy after guy after guy who puts it in his big briefcase and they go, like, good day, sir. And then they leave.
and they all look shifty.
And they all look terrible. They all look like mean bureaucratic guys in suits and big briefcases like, we sure took him. Like, we've got all his money now. All the profits. And we're going to squander it and make everyone equal and no one will have incentive to be better or anything like that. And I'm like, everybody in Denmark seems pretty happy.
Well, again, this is, and it didn't occur to me until watching this movie that Left Behind and Atlas Shrugged are kind of the same story.
No, they are.
Because it's about the people who are left to try and make sense of a rapidly crumbling world. Yeah, it is. While after all,
everyone else is being raptured.
After all the good people disappear. Because that's the other thing in Atlas Shrugged. Like, one by one, all of these sort of titans of industry are disappearing and going away. And so things are getting worse and worse. And the mooches and the mediocre, you know, government bureaucrats and the
leeches and parasites.
The leeches and parasites are in charge, you know. So yeah, so it's Left Behind.
And there's going to be two more of them, which is going to be great.
We'll see. Although, actually,
what happens?
Do you want to know about the box office for Atlas Shrugged this weekend?
I'm sure it was pretty good.
It was actually pretty good.
Per screen, I'm sure it was
per
pretty
screen,
good.
It was like 5,000 something. So it cleared like more than a million this weekend. So it's not embarrassing, not
here
great.
Here comes part two.
Bring it.
But this is just part one. So what happens in the rest of the book? You've read this book.
I read this book.
I ain't gonna read this book.
In a nutshell, basically, I can't remember all the specifics, but basically the government makes things worse and worse, where like it's harder and harder for Dagny and Reardon to do their thing and like fix everything. And eventually,
all the railroads.
Yeah, and this is a spoiler. I mean, it's a 50-year-old book, but so if you don't want to know what happens in Atlas Shrugged, you know, stop listening.
Then you should have read it already.
But basically, she finds, or she somehow winds up where all the tycoons went off to, which is some like sort of hidden little Shangri-La.
Didn't they call it Atlantis?
I think they call it Atlantis. Yes. Yeah. Where she meets John Galt, and it turns out that like he and Francisco D'Anconia, who's the like the playboy heir who had been in love with Dagny when they were younger,
right?
And then this pirate Dagnar Ramerskold something, who's been like stealing oil from tankers or whatever. Anyway, so they're all sort of in cahoots to basically create the New World Order of like unfettered, unregulated business.
All right, well, so if they had stuck around.
If they had stuck around,
then the world wouldn't be descending into chaos.
No, because the argument is if they had stuck around, they would have been taken apart piece by piece by the leeches and parasites.
But you're shown the world crumbling. Like, they show you clips of the world crumbling all around
you. But that's the leeches.
Because they're gone.
No, it's the leeches and parasites falling.
No, but if they had stayed, that wouldn't have been happening,
No.
Right?
Again, I'm not agreeing. I'm saying Rand's thing is that they leave because they would have been regulated to death, and all their money would have been taken away and spread out to other people. And,
I see.
You know, her thing is basically that, like, that any kind of government regulation equals communism, and that equals all the money gets taken away and spread out to everybody.
Happens?
And then
do they get their way at the end?
So then, yeah, basically the world crumbles to such an extent that finally John Galt goes on the radio and makes this speech that goes on for hundreds of pages. I can't wait to see how that gets put on film, because I've never been able to read that speech. I get about three pages and I'm like, she's repeating the entire thesis of this book.
Right.
Lengthily. And so, anyway. And yeah, and so at the end, you know, they come marching back and we're going to run everything now and no more taxes.
What happens to the leeches and parasites?
Are they
all dead?
I think they just sort of...
Do they have them killed?
They slink away into the shadows. I don't think anybody.
Why do you slink away into? You gotta eat somehow. Who gets to work for the magnanimous titans?
You know, a non-union labor.
Yeah, I know, but are they treated well? I mean, like, do they take the 9-year-old Malaysian child workers and pay them more than 2 cents a week?
The book,
in the perfect world,
the book kind of ends as they come galumphing in with their new constitution, whereby like no corporation will be taxed and no government regulations, and that's where it ends.
Does everyone still get a 5-day work week?
Again, we don't know.
Do you get vacation pay?
I think the real ending of Atlas Shrugged is basically America since 1980. That's the real ending of Atlas Shrugged. Because here's what happens when you
but if they're going to make the world
corporations
perfect.
Don't pay taxes and they don't have to be regulated, it means we have spinach in the we have E. coli in our spinach and all the kids' toys have lead paint.
Do
on
we?
Them.
If I'm going to work for Dagny on her railroad,
right?
And I'm the conductor of the choo-choo train.
Correct.
Because I want to wear that hat.
Yes.
What do I get? Do I get paid fairly?
I don't know.
Do I get
dental? They conveniently end the novel before they have to deal
do
with
it. Do I have to go buy my own dental?
I'm sure.
Am I paid enough to go buy my own dental?
I'm sure you would be paid commensurate to your willingness to work and your skills. But what there's no free ride for you. And if you get injured, tough toenails.
What about when I get to be old? And I'm still working on the railroad all the live long day. And then I lose my arm in a railroad accident.
Right.
And I can no longer conduct the choo-choo train. What happens to me? Do they put me on a ice floe? Do I suddenly become a leech and a parasite after working for the choo-choo train all this time?
These are very good questions.
Is she a nice lady, ultimately? Because she seems mean in the movie.
Dagny? She is...
She's kind of a ball buster in the movie.
She's driven and she's surrounded by incompetence, basically. She, you know, her brother is running the company.
I promise to be a good conductor.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. It raises a lot of questions, the whole notion of the thing. But anyway, this conversation is way more interesting than the movie was. That much I will say.
I don't know that that's true.
I think it's almost pretty
think,
sure to say.
I think you should go see... I think everyone should go see Atlas Shrugged. I think you should. I'm pro Atlas Shrugged now. I think you should
You've
go
come
see
around.
It. I've come around, and I think you should go see it. If only to look at the people who go see it voluntarily and happily and who applaud and cheer and stuff. You at least... Furthermore, it could be very exciting to go see Atlas Shrugged if people bring their guns, because that could happen.
Yeah, I was saying the day of last night, I thought that, you know, like, this could be the new Jack City as far as, like, if anybody's going to get shot in a movie this weekend, it's going to be at the one where people bring their, you know, holstered pistols to
if
Tea Party
would,
rallies.
If you would let me own a gun, I could have brought my own concealed weapon to Atlas Shrugged.
You cannot have a gun, because statistically speaking, you will shoot me.
I still don't believe that's true. I would use it to defend myself against the strangers and the leeches and the parasites.
Well, unfortunately, you would use it on me when I came to bed one night and you were asleep and having a bad dream. And you thought that I was a stranger.
Strangers!
Who was a leech and a parasite.
Boom, boom, bye-bye.
Exactly. So no gun for you. Forget it. All right, let's wrap this up. DVD choices this week?
White Material.
New from the Criterion Collection?
Claire Denis. She is a French director, and she makes amazing movies. And her new movie that came out at the end of last year is called White Material. And it's basically like if Gone with the Wind had the most delusional, unhinged Scarlett O'Hara in the world. And how she goes around...
Didn't get that the Yankees had taken terror.
Right, basically, like, thinks that everything's going to be okay and is going to fight tooth and nail, even as the slaves start attacking her.
Wonders why the slaves are all leaving.
Yeah.
This is set in Africa, by the way.
Yeah, it's set on a coffee plantation in Africa. Everything around her is crumbling and on fire, and child soldiers are toting guns around and killing everyone.
People in helicopters are telling her,
you've got to get out of here. And she's like, no, it is my coffee plantation.
Yeah, what about the harvest? Are you kidding?
And it
stars Isabelle Huppert.
Isabelle Huppert. It's an amazing movie. It was my favorite movie of last year.
So, it is now out on the Criterion Collection. My DVD pick, I'm going to say The Fountainhead. If you want to see a crazy Ayn Rand movie, but you want to see it from a decent director and with good actors like Gary Cooper.
Really cool sets.
And Patricia Neal and really cool sets.
Yeah.
See The Fountainhead. And then you're covered. You will not need to see the Atlas Shrugged movies. Unless, of course, you really want to go see who shows up.
You should totally go see Atlas Shrugged.
So thank you for tuning in again this week, folks. Want to, of course, give a shout out to our friends out there, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. I guess Popcorn Mafia is sort of on hiatus while Gray is traipsing around India. And Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram. And check out our Google feed at Linoleum Cast. And you can always drop us an email. Oh, I forgot to look at our emails this week.
On Twitter.
But I do look at your emails, I swear. LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com.
And we're on Twitter at LinoleumCast.
Which I just said.
Did you say that?
I did.
I was ignoring you.
Yes, clearly. And working on a Facebook page that will be happening soon.
You keep saying that.
We've had somebody has offered to come and photograph us. Like,
why am I surrounded by incompetence?
Leeches and parasites.
Where is John Galt?
Who is John Galt?
Whatever.
Anyway, join us next week. Bye.